everybody, and welcome to the Deadhead Cannabis Show. This is Jim Marty from Longmont, Colorado, and I've got my partner up in Chicago, Larry Mishkin.
Jim, how are you? And actually, today you find me in lovely St. Louis, Missouri. I came down to visit my father for a couple of days. I thought I might be heading back up north today, but decided to stay one more day since the weather is so beautiful down here. A rare day in St. Louis where it's 70 degrees and the humidity is actually below 50%. So very, very nice. But yeah, we're here. It's lovely. Nice to talk to you as always. You know, we have our crazy, frustrating world of legal marijuana floating around on us and the constant battle between appreciating the fact that our friends and fellow citizens can walk down to the local store or the local dispensary and pick up their marijuana for free, while at the same time grappling with the crazy government that can't quite seem to figure out, or maybe is unwilling to figure out, how to roll out one of these programs and avoid all the lawsuits. The latest in Chicago, Jim, is we had the awards, all the tiebreakers. The people who didn't make the tiebreakers filed their lawsuits. The governor came back and said, fine, we'll give you all a second chance to qualify for the tiebreakers. So they dismissed their lawsuits. Then a lawsuit was filed by the people that were already in the tiebreaker saying nobody else should be allowed in. That lawsuit is pending. In the meantime, last week, another group that apparently it's a trade association that has grown up around the new craft grow licenses, even though they haven't been awarded yet, has filed a lawsuit demanding that the court compel the state to announce the winners of the craft grow licenses, which the state has indicated they're not going to do yet for a while, even though they were due to announce that by July 1st. So, you know, there's a appropriate term that starts with the word cluster to describe this. And it's really unbelievable to see that, you know, such a big state with such a big market and such lucrative potential is going to waste it all and delay things for so long, you know, with all of these ongoing battles. You know, and like I say, I represent a guy who's made it into the tiebreaker, and I represent a number of groups that didn't make it into the tiebreaker. You know, I understand the positions of both parties, and you know, for that reason, it's hard for me to take a final position on what's right and what's wrong, other than to say that it would have been nice to have a system in place that could have avoided ties or tiebreakers. And that's another story for another day. I don't want to waste a lot of time on that, because we are very, very lucky to again have with us this, I think, becomes our first repeat guest on the Deadhead Cannabis Show, and no better person for it to be than Jay Blakesburg. Jay, again, for those of you who missed our show last time, is a professional photographer, works very heavily in the jam band industry, is the photographer of choice of the moment for Dead & Company and other related Dead members, works with Phish, works with Widespread Panic, works with just about everybody, and, you know, really has the job that all of us are dreaming would be kind of cool to have, so we didn't have to go to the office every day and type reports. Jay, it's great to have you back on the show. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. What was all that stuff you were just talking about? Were you speaking in English or some other language? I'm not really sure if I understood anything you were saying.
Oh, no, this is it. This is English. This is what happens when the government gets involved in legal marijuana and tries to decide who gets to sell it and who doesn't.
Got it. Okay, I wasn't sure. Just checking.
Yeah, and so Illinois has done a remarkably wonderful job of screwing things up, which, given the fact that it's Illinois, probably shouldn't come as such a huge surprise to any of us, but also given the fact that the governor really supports it and is looking for the revenue generated from that program to save the state from its miserable financial condition, I was just surprised that they really let it sink to the level that it has now sunk, you know, in terms of the delay. Instead of these new adult use dispensaries opening up any day now, we still don't even know who's getting the licenses. So it's crazy. But like I say, you know, for the rest of the people out there who can just walk down the street now and buy legal marijuana, they could care less. They're just happy to have a legal marijuana market. So we take it and we move forward. So here's my question for you, Jay. When we talked to you last time, we know that you do a lot of work with the live music industry, photographs. Sometimes you're doing the live video feed and stuff like that. But it all centers around this idea of there being live music. And for the last 7 to 8 months, there really hasn't been very much live music. What does a guy like you do during that time?
Well, not a lot of shooting, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I actually did get 3 days of paid work courtesy of the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival. Nice. They did a bunch of, they broadcast an incredible stream two weekends ago, I guess it was, or last, yeah, 2 weekends ago. Mm-hmm. And it was phenomenal. And I was on set on the day that Boz Scaggs performed, and Lebo, hello, and a few, you know, a few other things. Chuck Prophet, longtime Bay Area kind of alt rock guy. It was very cool. It was fun to be shooting. But yeah, I have not done a lot of shooting. So what have I been doing? I have been digging deep into my archives, trying to figure out what projects that I could do. So, like, you know, I make books, right? I've produced, published 16 coffee table books of my music photography. My last one came out exactly a year ago. It was the Jerry Garcia book. You can still right. find that on my website, rockoutbooks.com. And I actually just, popped up a cool little bundle package for the holidays. You can get an 8x10 print and a book together for a heavily discounted price of what those things would cost individually. So go to rockoutbooks.com and check that out. And that'll stay up through the holidays, basically. But I'm thinking, like, you know, what kind of books do I want to do? Like, what's my next book? I like putting out a book every year, every 2 years. And so the one book that I've really been working on pretty consistently is a book that doesn't really have a title at the moment. The working title is Psychedelic Icons. And okay. So that book is people that I have already photographed that fit that bill. So Kesey, Leary, Owsley, the members of the Grateful Dead, the psychedelic poster artists, Grace Slick, Paul Kantner, Country Joe McDonald. But I actually have done two new shoots for that book. The first one was a guy named Mark McLeod, and Mark lives here in San Francisco, and he owns and runs the only LSD museum in the world, I think.
Wow.
It's in his home, and he's got these, he lives in the Mission District, and he's just got an incredible collection of blotter LSD and other ephemera that relates to that in his house. And I went over there with my daughter, and we spent an afternoon with him, and he's got great stories, and you know, of course, he was arrested for conspiracy and, you know, different things like that. He told me a great story about how when the, I think it was the FBI, it could have been the DEA, had to return all of his blotter acid that they confiscated, that's all framed and matted and, you know, on his walls. Actually, when you go into his house, all of the frames on the walls have a little piece of masking tape in the corner with a number on it. And I thought that was just some system he had created, but that was all evidence from when he got arrested, but from the FBI, I think it was. To keep track of all the different blotter that they had photographed and confiscated from him. And they made him go and meet him at the airport in Oakland. This is way back in 1992 or 3 or something like that, that they returned it to him. And he had to go meet him on the private jet tarmac, and they handed him all the boxes with all of his art. And he said, thank you very much, and you should have spent more time worrying about who was going to bomb the World Trade Center towers than investigating me, and maybe you could have stopped that. And they didn't like that, and they were ready to shoot him on the spot. Anyway, he got all his blotter acid back. So Mark McLeod, interesting character. You can look him up on the internet. So I photographed him. And then the other day, about, I think it was 2 weekends ago on a Sunday, I went down and photographed a guy named Jim Fadiman, Dr. James Fadiman, who is a big proponent of microdosing. He's he's a very famous psychologist. He's never practiced, in private practice. But I photographed him 27 years ago for a magazine story. I had no idea about his history, who he was. It was in 1993, or his wife. I photographed the two of them together down at their house. And I went back to the same house, I believe, again this time. It turns out that his wife, Dorothy, who's a very famous filmmaker and made a bunch of documentary films, she was Ken Kesey's girlfriend in 1962 and 1963, and then met Jim Fadiman, and then they got married in 1964 and have been married since. And they've had a very long relationship, but they're very, very important to the whole psychedelic story of psychedelic icons. He's written numerous books on the subject. So I photographed Jim by himself because my photo shoot from 27 years ago was just the two of them. And I didn't really realize that she was Ken. I didn't know she was Ken Kesey's girlfriend until I met with him the other day. But I wanted a solo shot of Jim for the book, and I'm going to use one of those old shots also. But, you know, I'm the only person to ever do a posed portrait of Owsley Stanley III, the most notoriously camera-shy individual in rock and roll psychedelic outlaws. I kind of want to call my book Psychedelic Outlaws and Other Cowboys. The problem is that there's women in the book, so it's got to be Psychedelic Outlaws and Other Cowpoke. I don't know. Denise Kaufman, do you know who Denise Kaufman is? In the book, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, she is Mary Microgram.
Oh, really? Oh, my goodness.
She is a Mary prankster, and she's in a band called The Ace of Cups that has a new record coming out, I think, this week. And I shot the album for that. I did the photos for that. But they started to make a record in 1967 after they opened up for Jimi Hendrix in the Panhandle in Golden Gate Park after Jimmy played Monterey Pop and burned his guitar and changed the world. The Ace of Cups opened for them in the Panhandle. And then they all started having kids and they sort of went on with their lives. And they got back together about, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 years ago and finished that record that they started in 1967.
Better late than never.
Yep, and they released it. And now this is their next record that I just photographed. So Denise is going to be in my book, Mary Microgram, Grace Blick. And we're not really interviewing people for the most part. The person who's writing it is a guy named Nick Merriweather. And Nick was the guy that was tapped to run the Grateful Dead UC Santa Cruz archives when they first opened it. Remember when they put a job posting up that said, "What?"
I do.
Right, wanted, you know, PhD level academic to run, you know, who also was into the Grateful Dead to run the Grateful Dead archives.
It was that damn PhD requirement that eliminated me.
The what requirement?
The PhD requirement.
PhD requirement, yeah. So yeah. Nick Merriweather got that job and he stayed there for a number of years and then he left. And so Nick, who's this incredible writer, incredible intellectual, incredible deadhead, he's written a lot of academic journals. He's part of that whole Grateful Dead academic conference that happens every year. He's writing the book. He's writing the text for this book. And he had a bunch of essays written. And then he lives down in near Santa Cruz where the fires were. And lightning struck his house and fried his computers and hard drives. And he lost everything that he wrote.
Okay.
So it was in a backup hard drives, the hard drive, everything fried, right? So, and then he spent a week in front of his house with a garden hose with him and his neighbor while everybody else evacuated. And they did 24/7 watch and were just hosing their roof down because of all the embers that were falling.
Oh, my.
Now those houses are burned down in other neighborhoods where the fires are, you know, 2 or 3 miles away. And so he did that. So where he's trying to regroup. Luckily, he hand writes all of his notes. So he's got a lot of post-it notes and he's trying to recreate the book. So that was a book that was going to come out a year from now, but it still might. If he might be able to pull it off, we'll see. And then
let me jump in for 1 second. Quick question for you. Okay. How did you manage to get Owsley Stanley to sit with you?
So, you know, in the old days, Grateful Dead concerts, if Owsley saw you backstage and you had a camera, he would run away from you. And he did that once. He saw me. I lifted my camera from 20 feet away, and he immediately put his hand over his face and moved and left. And that's a known fact that there are very, very few photos of Owsley. You know, there's a handful from the late 60s, a handful from the mid 70s, and then not very many for, you know, after that. And so I was up at the Grateful Dead warehouse in Novato. This is post Front Street after they sold Front Street, rented the old Coca-Cola bottling factory in Novato and held on to that for a number of years, right after Jerry died. And Phil was rehearsing with a band and Owsley was in from Australia to do mixed sound for a few shows, which I'm killing myself for not shooting with the soundboard. But anyway, I had a whole photo studio set up in the back room on the loading dock and to do a portrait of whatever band it was that he was rehearsing with that day that was going to do some shows because I was photographing all these Phil and Friend shows. And Owsley walks by and I've got big studio lighting going on. And this is back in the days of film. So I think it was 99. I saw my Hasselblad, which is a medium format, you know, camera that takes a negative that's 2.25 inches by 2.25 inches. So a lot bigger than 35 millimeter. It's like you use it for shooting ads and magazine covers and things like that. And he goes, "What's all this?" And I said, I'm going to do a portrait of Phil when he's done rehearsing. And he looks at me and goes, you want to do a portrait of me? I go,
oh, my God.
And he,
And
he sits down, and I think I shot 6 frames in black and white and maybe that many in color. And he gets up and walks away. And I'm just freaking out because Owsley had never done that. I'm the only person to do a formal posed portrait with Owsley Stanley III.
Did you get to talk to him at all?
For a minute. Not really.
Did he give you a couple of tabs just for, you know, as a thank you or something?
He did not. But, you know, it's interesting. I was looking through my memorabilia recently, and I came across a business card that he gave me back in the Grateful Dead days of Owsley Stanley with the steal your face on it, whatnot. Anyway, so that book that's going to have Owsley in it and Ginsberg and all the, you know, there's some beat poets that we have in it. You know, we're just sort of connecting the dots from all these different angles, like Dr. David Smith. He's the guy that founded the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic. Like, we're going to put him in the book, I'm pretty sure, because, you know, he saw these acid casualties coming in off of Haight Street in 1967, and he's the only one that did something about it. You know, he was in medical school or maybe an intern and, you know, thought he was going to go on and please his father and become a doctor in small town America where he grew up or whatever, and instead he changed the world with the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic and later Rock Med, which was, you know, at all the concerts. Anyway, that's just one of my books. I want to do a book on the guitars of the Grateful Dead. I went up to TRI, to Bob Weir Studio, a couple of months ago, and I shot 21 of Bob's guitars that he played during the time of the Grateful Dead.
21?
21 different guitars, yeah. And there's still more to go.
Including the pink one?
Including the pink modulus. So, yeah.
Okay, nice.
And so that's another book project. That's a slow one because, like, a bunch of Garcia's guitars are, you know, locked up in vaults at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and different places. And, you know, there was that exhibit, right? The guitar exhibit that was at the Met. It moved to the Rock Hall, and that's where Wolf is. And so because of COVID, it's all locked down. So, I don't know when that owner is going to get that one back, or the Tiger guitar, I think, might be there also. So, you know, and then there's some other Jerry guitars, you know, the Alligator Stratocaster that Graham Nash gave to Jerry in 70 or 71 for playing on Teach Your Children. That one is here in the Bay Area, and a good friend of mine owns it, so that's going to be no problem to shoot that. Also, Jerry's acoustic Martin guitar that he played on Festival Express, and I think also maybe American Beauty and Working Man's Dead. That's here in the Bay Area, so that I have access to. You know, so that's a project that's going to take a little bit of time. And then I'm thinking about doing a book on music festivals. And then the cool thing is just about a couple of days ago, I was down in L.A. this last weekend because I'm doing a documentary. I'm working on a documentary, and I was doing some interviews down there. I've done 21 interviews during the time of COVID. Just me, one-on-one, 2 cameras, 2 microphones. And that documentary is about deadheads and psychedelics and how you become a deadhead and you know why we're 60-year-old fans, and instead of having art on the walls like our parents had on their walls when they were 60s, we have, you know, pictures of the Grateful Dead or Widespread Panic or you know, Fish or whoever else we love. And and so it's a story about my photography and my adventure through becoming a deadhead, going on tour, getting out of jail, moving into the Bay Area, becoming me, taking pictures. So I'm doing that documentary. And while I was in LA, about a year ago, maybe a little bit more at this point, there was an article that showed up in GQ magazine online. You can check it out. And it was an article about Dan Healy. You know who Dan Healy is? He was the long sure. Front of house sound man for the Grateful Dead, decades, yeah. and a huge innovator in audio technology, really an incredibly famous person. Dan Healy discovered in a crawl space or something like that under his house, some storage space, 500 vintage Grateful Dead t-shirts. Okay.
From what era?
From the beginning. I think we have the very official Grateful Dead merchandise item ever.
Wow.
And so his daughter, Ambrosia Healy, who's in the music business, aggregated all of these t-shirts and a bunch of other memorabilia and brought them down to LA to where she lives. And she called me and said, you know, what do I do with this? And she was going to, you know, she's going to sell them because her dad needs, you know, I don't know if he needs the money, but, you know, he deserves the money. He doesn't want them.
Sure.
So we're going to make sure they get into the hands of deadheads. And vintage t-shirts are a hot item, right? I don't know if you know that. There's a big market for it. You know, these $10 t-shirts, $6 t-shirts are now, some of them are worth $1,000.
Yep.
And so anyway, so she didn't want to sell them or do anything with them until we could photograph them. And I said, I'm coming to LA to do some interviews for a documentary. Let's photograph the t-shirts. And on Saturday, I photographed 400 Grateful Dead t-shirts.
That is so cool.
And while we were doing that, we came across some real doozies. So you guys ever hear of a Grateful Dead concert at Cornell on May 8th, 1977?
Absolutely.
So he's got four or five never worn Cornell 77 t-shirts.
Oh my God.
Remember Watkins? Wow. Remember Watkins Glen?
That too, with the Allman Brothers.
It's got about five Watkins Glen original t-shirts. So there's a lot of really intense shit in there that we photographed. So then,
that's amazing.
At the end of the day, after we were ahead of schedule, we actually finished 400 t-shirts by about 5 p.m. instead of like 9 p.m. like we thought. Started about 10 a.m. I think we rolled in. And so anyway, she said, by the way, I've got some memorabilia here. that was Dan's. So we start looking through these boxes. So I come across a little bundle of 10 concert programs from a very specific show. Did you ever see a concert program from when they played in Egypt in 1978?
Oh my God.
I didn't even know it existed.
Neither did I. Wow.
So I took it out and I photographed it.
Oh my God.
Right. So I've got photographs of the original concert program, which is written in Arabic and English. So I photographed that. And then they had a box of backstage passes, like around 4,000 of them. And so we found all the backstage passes from the spring 77 tour where Cornell fit in. He has a full set of them, like 15 of each. Right. So we photographed all of those in a line, all in order. Although I realized we put one of them out of order. I don't know how we fucked that shit up, but we did. You know, it goes like the 23rd, 24th, 26th, 28th, and we put the 25th down by the 30th. I don't know how.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, we got all of those, and we just photographed a bunch of random backstage passes throughout the years. Found some Europe 72 backstage pass, or at least one backstage pass.
Wow.
I photographed a bunch of his tour laminates. You know, most tour laminates these days are like the size of like a baseball card or bigger.
Right.
The tour laminates, like in the 70s, were like,
oh, used to be.
No. They were like 1 inch, 1.5 inches by like 2 inches.
Oh.
They were like little baby laminates and in the 70s. And so So we photographed a bunch of Dan Healy and his wife's laminates. And then this was a holy grail item. Besides the Egypt 78 fucking tour book, right? When bands go on tour today, everybody that's on the tour gets a tour book. And in that tour book, it's like, it's day by day. So here's what time load-in is. Here's what time soundcheck is. Here's what time curfew is. Here's what you're doing after the show. You're getting on your bus and you're driving 322 miles for 8 hours or whatever it is. You're going to be back to your hotel and the next day's a day off and you're staying your day off and that's whatever it is. It's got all the information. Dan Healy had the Europe 72 tour book. Okay. Now, for some of you guys that I'm looking at on this little visual video thing that we're doing while we record have gray hair like me. So you guys might remember what a mimeograph machine is from when we were kids, right?
Good smelling.
Yeah.
You get a good high off of it.
This thing was, I believe these are mimeograph pages. Okay. In like a brown binder with like a metal clip that it's not punched, no hole punched, no three rings. It's just, so we just undid it. I just photographed all the pages, all the band members, all the family members, everybody's names, full first, middle, last name, you know, no ramrod shirt lift, like Lawrence Leo shirt lift. I think that was
right.
You know, with their passport numbers, you know, exchange rates in all the different countries, what hotels they're staying in, who's bunking with who, the equipment manifests, you know, it's got to be 40 pages, 50 pages, you know, all mimeographed, all fading. You can barely see it, some of them, you know, but I photographed that. Anyway, so that's what I did on Saturday. So we're thinking that's a book.
Yeah.
We're thinking that's a book, you know, and I was just actually texting those folks and saying, I think this has got to be a book that's like the collection of Dan Healy, not just a bunch of random T-shirts, you know. So I want to include some of this memorabilia along with the T-shirts, because, you know, it's just and Ambrosia or Dan Healy just said, you know, the merch people or fans or whoever, you know, the promoters, a lot of these T-shirts were promoters. One of them had like a weird thing on the back that said a Corky and Harvey promotion, production, I think it was Corky and Harvey. And we didn't know what that was. And we found out Harvey Weinstein.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. Because, Ambrosia's husband's also in the music business. And he's like, I didn't shoot it. And he goes, oh, you didn't shoot the Corky and Harvey one. That's Harvey Weinstein's production company when he used to produce concerts back in the '70s. So anyway, so that's a book project. I already told you about.
Let me, ask you a question, kind of bring things more up to date where we're at now. Is what are you hearing about shows for 2021? Because, you know, obviously contracts are being laid about this time for spring tour. And
well, I mean, I'm hearing the same thing you guys are. Like, you know, first of all, our idiot in chief who doesn't know what the fuck he can do is with, you know, as far as being a leader of this country, besides sending out the secret Gestapo police to arrest protesters, sort of like Nazi Germany, 1937, thereabout. Because of the lack of any kind of government oversight, we're fucked. So I would say it's a pretty safe bet that live music can't happen next summer. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a guy. But, you know, I read the news. I pay attention. You know, I listen to Fauci. I pay attention to science. I just don't see, you know, two of the big trials that were just canceled yesterday for the vaccine. You know, I don't really know, but so I know that a lot of a lot of bands have contracts in place for next summer, and they already have backup dates later in the fall before the season sort of ends. And I'm sure that some of those bands have contracts for going into 2022 as backups. So my guess is, and again, this is a guess, I don't know anything, I'm just a fucking photographer, filmmaker, book publisher, is that, you know, we're going to have a long winter ahead of us. That's not going to end with, you know, and the thing that's so cool is, you know, there's small concerts happening all over the place now at the end of the season here. The East Coast is way ahead of the curve. Warren Haynes has been doing shows, and Pigeons Playing Ping Pong, and Goose. Well,
and Trey's doing his residency now at the Beacon.
Yeah, but there's no audience there. I'm talking about shows with audiences. There's been a bunch of stuff going on with small audiences that I hear have been going really well, and small backyard shows. And I'm guessing that's going to continue, but I don't see anybody going to a 20,000-person amphitheater in the summer, let alone a 20,000-person indoor venue. Next summer. I would love for it to happen. I would love nothing more than it for happen, but I'm not holding my breath because I don't want to be disappointed. I hope and pray that by this time next year, you know, I hope and pray by this time next month, we have new government leadership. Please, everybody, go out and vote blue like your life depends on it. It really does. I'm sorry for any of you conservative people, but our president lies every day. I don't know how you can support somebody like that. He was just officially endorsed by the Taliban and the KKK. So I don't know how you can support that either. And so I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm a liberal person, and I really love my country, and he is taking this country in the wrong direction. And I don't think that's the true essence of the Republican Party. And I don't have a problem with Republicans who are the true essence of being Republicans, but unfortunately, our president is going in a very bad, bad direction. I'll stop there. I'm sorry.
Jay, quick question for you and you touched on it before that I wanted to swing around back to in terms of music for a minute. And we mentioned that the Trey shows are without an audience. And there's been a lot of that lately, right? I know that a lot of people have been performing without audiences. Jay Rad just did a whole series of shows. And have you gotten involved in any of the streams of those or anything involved with that?
Not really. You know, I have, I photographed the 3 days of Hardly Strictly Bluegrass. You know, there's people doing it in their living rooms. I'm actually going to go hang out with Jackie Green at his house coming up when he does one of his streams, just for fun, just because I haven't seen Jackie in a while and he has a new baby. I want to go see him with me and my wife, and we're going to go visit his family and nice. Get COVID, get some COVID tests beforehand. So anyway, you know, and I apologize for my strong opinions about our government, but you know, I just think that.
Well, you still have a right to free speech, my friend.
Okay. Anyway,
absolutely.
The first time I saw Jackie Green was at Red Rocks, and he was opening for, I don't know who, maybe it was the Allman Brothers he was opening for. I'd never heard of it. I said, man, this guy's really good. And he was so young at that time, he had braces on.
Wow. Okay.
And the first time I saw Jackie Green was when he was playing with Phil and Friends, and they came to do 3 shows at the Riviera Nightclub in Chicago, which is an old, old theater on the north side right near the Uptown, which has been closed forever too. And it's kind of a rundown joint. And it was in October, and it was significant because the Cubs were in the playoffs, which meant the crowd at the show wasn't so great because everybody was running over to see the Cubs. But even still, this place was packed, and it was 100 degrees in there. Like they had 2 air conditioning vents in the entire building. For the Saturday night show, they played and played, and the second set went on and on and on. And after just an unbelievable Help on the Way, Slipknot, Franklin's, and everybody thought, oh my God, this is it, they're all done, Phil immediately kicks it in to a killer Viola Lee. And you can see, we were close enough, you could see Jackie stopped and looked at him and said, really? And Phil was like, hell yeah, you know. And then later on, the quote I read the next day was, you have to teach these kids, Saturday night in Chicago, you don't end early, you keep playing. But it just struck me because I was impressed by what a great musician he was, and how he, you know, just hung with that band and played the Dead stuff so well. It was really, it was a treat to see him.
Hey, can we end with Jay? I was showing you a picture earlier of Jerry all dressed up with a vest on and a white shirt and playing a banjo in front of an American flag. Do you know what the story behind that is?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a Herbie Green photo. Herbie's a dear friend of mine. Herbie did a lot of work with the band right from the beginning, a lot of portraits. He did that very famous portrait of Garcia with the top hat and a lot of, you know, them under the Haight Ashbury sign. That's taken inside 710 Ashbury as part of a series of photos that Herbie did of Jerry and in front of that big American flag, which I believe was in Garcia's bedroom, if I remember correctly. But it was shot at 710 Ashbury.
Wow.
That's good to know.
Very cool.
Anything else to ask me? I mean, I probably opened a whole can of worms.
Well,
here.
Tell you what. In fact, we want to have you back, and I want to hear some more of your stories. And we'll talk some politics. We'll see who's the president in a few weeks. And love to have you back.
Absolutely. One other thing, Jay, were you at those shows in '89 in Hampton when they went as formerly the Warlocks?
I was not. No.
Okay. I was just reading about it because we just celebrated the anniversary of that show the other day on October 9th. And what I loved about it was, you know, it's one of those nights where they say, oh, yeah, I see this with Fish a lot when they do the Fish set list. I don't see it with the Dead so much because apparently that night for the encore, they broke out Addicts. It was the fourth longest breakout ever. It was after 1,082 shows the first time that they had played it.
Wow.
And I love that kind of stuff. You know, Fish on their regular set list, it'll say first time played in 500 and whatever shows.
Right. Well, that Addicts is, I mean, you know, Addicts is one of those songs that has always had special meaning. But as we get older, you know, and it's, you know, it's such a song for, you know, that part of our lives. And my Jerry Garcia book that came out a year ago is called Secret Space of Dreams, which, of course, is a line from Addicts of My Life. And so I'll do one more plug if you want to go check out that book out at rockoutbooks.com for signed copies. And I've got a special holiday bundle package there you can check out with a print. But yeah, it's a super special song. And so, you know, for them to play
it, was the last song they ever played.
For them to play it, you know, after not playing it for 1,000 shows or whatever it was, it's pretty remarkable and a very meaningful moment. And, you know, of course, now, you know, 1 year after losing Robert Hunter, you know, those songs that are so profound and have so much meaning. And you know, I always say that, you know, the songs of the Grateful Dead, as we get older, they all take on different meanings. You know, those songs mean something to us when we're in our 20s and something else.
Absolutely.
In our 30s, something else in our 40s and so on and so forth. And, you know, those are, you know, some of the most profound lyrics. I interviewed Blair Jackson for my documentary film, and I interviewed a guy named Bill Bentley, who used to work for Warner Brothers Records, Neil Young's publicist, you know, in LA on my recent trip down there. And that was one of the things we were talking about, is just, you know, these lyrics, these profound lyrics of Hunter and, you know, and.
Speaking of which, I see, you know, you were talking about your daughter. How old's your daughter, Jay?
She's 24.
Okay. We have a 22-year-old, and he and I have been listening to Must Have Been the Roses quite a bit, trying to unravel that song.
Right.
And the question we have is Annie passed away in that song? Is he singing about somebody who's not with us anymore?
That's how I always read it, I guess, you know, later had some of the roses. Yeah. That you know, so, but, my daughter actually, here's another little plug. My daughter also just, started a new Instagram page for me. So I have my regular Instagram page, which is just Jay Blakesburg. Well, my daughter just started one called Retro Blakesburg, and she's curating it, and it's only photographs that I shot on film, nothing digital.
Oh, okay.
So if you're interested in checking out a new Instagram page, go to Retro Blakesburg. Check that out there. So
I'm going to make a plug for our son, Jack Marty's band. He's in a Phish tribute band called Kings of Prussia, and they are actually getting gigs. We're going to go to one tomorrow night.
Awesome. My new puppy's name is Wilson, because he is the King of Prussia and the Duke of Lizards. So there you go.
All right, everybody. We've run a little bit long, but this has been a fascinating conversation with Jay Blakesburg. And like I said, we'd love to have you back maybe in a month or two. And talk some music, talk some politics, talk some marijuana laws and regulations. So, all right, everybody, this is Jim Marty thanking Jay to being with us today. Larry, why don't you sign us off?
I will, Jim. Thank you so much from lovely St. Louis. First of all, thank you again to our great host, guest and friend, Jay Blakesburg. Always fun to have you on the show. Great stories that the rest of us, you know, just we don't even know the stories exist, let alone, you know, what the stories are. So it's always wonderful to learn new things about our favorite band and some of our favorite stuff. We appreciate good political enthusiasm, and we're very happy that you could join us today. To everyone else, have a great week. Stay safe. Enjoy your marijuana responsibly, and we will talk to you soon. Thank you very much.